So folks, welcome to our afternoon FMS meeting, and thank you all very much. I'm just sort of rotating back in to fill the extremely large shoes of Judge Buckley, who I think you all know is retiring, much to his distinguished career and his credit, and we all thank him very much. I don't think he's with us today though, right? Judge Buckley, you're not on today, so. I've been following all your work from afar and from a close, and have been so reassured by the great hands that you've been in with Rebecca and Judge Buckley, and I'm coming back in on a temporary basis, but Rebecca is still really the one that's the master of this group, and you're all so much appreciated. I see a full agenda ahead of us today, but I really think we can get through it in the shorter time than we have scheduled, but we'll take all the time we need. We are being recorded. I think you all know the rules of the game. So I think we'll move immediately after our thanks to Judge Buckley on the record to approval of the minutes from the November 17th virtual meeting that are page 3 of your material. Is there a motion to approve?
Judge Conklin, before that, can we go ahead and start roll, please? Yes.
Yeah. See how long I've been away? I see Rebecca like, hold on a minute, slow down. So let's take roll and then we'll approve the minutes. Cottrell, thank you.
Of course. Judge Conklin.
I'm here. I think.
Ms. Fleming.
I am here.
Judge Kelly.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Siebert.
Here.
Judge Thompson is unavailable at the moment. He may join us later, so I'll skip to Mr. Finke.
I am here.
Mr. Harrigan. Mr. Riley.
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki?
Good afternoon, I'm here.
Thank you.
And Cottrell, I think we may have missed Mr. Kim.
Right.
Mr. Kim sent an email as well, informing us that he was not available due to a scheduling conflict.
Thank you.
Of course.
So present, we don't have Judge Thompson, Kevin Harrigan, or James Kim, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I'm here, folks. I'm sorry, I don't think I got myself off mute.
Thank you.
Thought I saw you. Great. Now, moving back to moving ahead, if I could have a motion to approve the minutes from the November 17th meeting.
Yamasaki moves approval.
Second.
Right.
I saw Neil Taniguchi seconded. Any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes? As the chair, I'll deem the minutes unanimously approved. And as I understand it, pardon me?
I'm sorry to interrupt. If I could abstain from that, I wasn't present.
Great, Judge Kelly, thank you. And I also show Cottrell that we had no, we had a written comment, I believe, or not?
No, it doesn't appear as though we received any public comments.
Okay, great, thank you. So now we move to our discussion items. The first is the workload formula adjustment request process. We have Oksana Tuck with us today to discuss the one-time adjustment request process submitted to the Judicial Council Administrative Director from the Santa Clara Superior Court. Understandably, therefore, Rebecca's going to sort of be here but not participate in this directly. And so, Oksana, this request includes revisiting the court obligations that were intended to be funded with civil assessment revenues. I know you guys have spent a lot much longer down this path than I have, but I'm familiar with it for when I served on the committee to determine if adjustments are warranted, determine if obligations should include other revenue sources in addition to civil assessments, and determine how the obligations are reflected in the workload formula. With that introduction, Oksana.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Oksana Tak, Senior Analyst with Budget Services. Santa Clara Superior Court submitted a workload formula adjustment request early this year, requesting that courts with an obligation intended to be funded with civil assessment revenue be adjusted due to legislative and council policy changes, the decline in civil assessment revenue, the decline or elimination of other previously existing revenue sources, and the changes in child court reserves. In addition, the request includes revisiting how these obligations are reflected in the workload formula as compared to actual revenue received. The current listing of local agreements regarding debt service obligations from civil assessments was developed by the FMS back in February 2019, when it was determined that the impacts of civil assessments should be adjusted for each court's workload formula allocation to include net civil assessments based on the most current fiscal year data. This process reduces the amount of the workload formula allocation calculation for each court as compared to the workload formula need. Table 1 on page 6 of the materials show how civil assessment obligations impacted the workload formula for the 6 courts that had civil assessment obligation recognized in the workload formula for the current year. The reduction of the obligation resulted in a decrease in courts' updated workload formula allocation and workload formula percentage. As a result, the courts could be eligible for additional new discretionary funding that flows through the workload formula allocation methodology. The same would apply if any of the amounts are increased or a new court is added to the list. In the current fiscal year, excuse me, there was one occurrence in making a debt obligation adjustment to the court's workload allocation where the contractual obligation exceeded the revenue amount. According to current practice, a zero value was recorded in the workload formula rather than using the actual negative revenue amount. The ARP submission is proposing that the negative revenue amount be used to accurately depict base operational costs that are used to cover these obligations, which were originally planned to be covered by civil assessment revenue. An example of how this change would impact the workload formula is outlined in tables 2 and 3 as a high-level hypothetical scenario with varying court sizes. The use of a negative value would increase the court's funding gap as compared to its need by decreasing the workload formula allocation and workload formula percentage. As a result, the court could be eligible for additional new discretionary funding that flows through the workload formula allocation methodology. The recommendations presented to the FMS for consideration are listed on page 7 of the materials, which includes determining if debt service obligations should be reviewed again to obtain updated information for consideration in the workload formula. Next, if the obligations should include other revenue sources in addition to civil assessments. And lastly, determining if the revenue adjustment made in the workload formula should capture obligations offsets that exceed the actual revenue amount as to reflect a negative amount instead of the zero. That concludes our presentation, and we will be happy to answer any questions.
Sana, thank you so much. So questions and or discussion? Okay. Go ahead, David.
Sorry, Judge Conklin, if I may. David Yamasaki here. I had some questions regarding their recommendations because they seem a little bit compound. And I don't know if that was intended. I was in looking at the Santa Clara request, which I think is related to the debt service obligation. And then there's a follow-up component to that recommendation about other sources of revenue. So that was throwing me a little bit because I have a position as relates specifically to one. But I need to have additional clarity on the other sources of revenue. And so I don't know if the action that is contemplated today is a recommendation to look into it, the subject, or it is it to make a recommendation to the Budget Advisory Committee to either accept the request or something else? That's maybe we can start out with that one.
David, this is Brandy. I'm happy to chime in. The way that we approach this for the funding methodology subcommittee and ultimately TCBAC is a more general approach. While Santa Clara would be impacted, the request does say, you know, recommend looking at all courts to see if there are any changes that need to be made for them as well, not just Santa Clara alone. So that would be kind of step one. Does this warrant a re-review from 2019? Secondly, this was focused on civil assessments when we did do that work back in 2019. Should we include other revenue sources as well that are tied to certain types of obligations? And the third piece would be the workload formula impact. There was an instance in where a court had their obligation exceed its revenue. In that instance, instead of putting a negative revenue amount into the workload formula for that court, we put a zero. And it could be discussed that that is not fully representing the fact that the obligation exists and that the court is using its base funding to be able to pay that obligation.
Very good. Thank you very much. That is extremely helpful.
Other questions, concerns? So I appreciate the clarification. And again, I'm sort of coming in now after being away for quite a while, but Santa Clara's request, I think, is a very valid one, but it would not be limited to just Santa Clara. Any court that is in a similarly situated position with debt obligation would be part of this, in fairness. Is that correct? That's not that, right?
That's correct. It will apply to any eligible court. Not
and
just
do we know about how many courts that is?
Well, we currently have six courts with any kind of obligations. One is dropping off, so potentially five.
So this is Judge Seward. I had a quick question. Actually, this is all new to me, so I'm trying to get my head around it. When I read all the memos regarding the Santa Clara request, it seemed like it was all tied to some debt obligation associated with some courthouse building issue. But does this allocation that we're talking about, I mean, I assume every court has been impacted by the reduction in civil assessments revenue, correct?
Sorry, I'm trying to unmute. Judge Siebert, that is correct. So ultimately, what the workload formula does is it includes a column that identifies other local revenues that courts receive in addition to the distributed funding from our trial court trust fund. So that column says a court is getting $1 million, but they also collect $1 million in civil assessment. So it's $101 million. And that's what we look at as how you are funded compared to what the formula says that you need. As that civil assessment decreases, you could be at 100.5 million, or it starts to go down. So your allocation will decrease as that civil assessment decreases into the model. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps. So I guess what I'm
there's others that could probably wrapping your head around it is a very good way to phrase it, because this is a very thorny issue. But I think the other aspect that comes into play is, though all the courts, you're correct, have civil assessment revenue, there's a very limited number of courts now, as I understand it from Oksana, five, that have another special obligation that none of the other courts have. And that's a debt obligation related to, in this case, courthouse and courthouse turnover, or courthouse
construction.
What's the word I'm looking for? Construction. That those courts are obligated to take on that all the other courts aren't.
And so their
civil assessment, pardon me?
I was going to say, what is the background that made it so those people have an additional obligation that the rest of the courts don't have? In other words, was it something they chose to do and expected that they were going to be able to generate enough revenue from civil assessments and otherwise to meet those obligations and basically assume that risk? Or is it that risk was imposed upon them for some reason different than the way other courts have had their construction's funded. That's the part
I see. I see David ready to take the reins on this one because you've now drilled down into part of the crux of the issue. David?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So what I'm going to use Santa Clara as a specific example. One of the agreements to move forward with the construction in Santa Clara was that it would be a shared responsibility to pay down the debt service of that project. One of them is that it was going to come from the ICNA account, which was earmarked for the construction of the building. There was also a component in Santa Clara's project that recognized that some of the facility payments, the county's on the hook to provide facility payments as it relates to leases to offset the construction costs of the project. And in this instance, the leased facilities, there were five, would terminate the leases, but the obligation of the county goes on in perpetuity, and that money was going to be used to pay down the debt service for the project. Where civil assessment comes into play is at the time when civil assessment was basically a standard operating component for courts, Santa Clara was bringing in something on the order of $9 million. And so at the time, before there had been significant changes in the law, specifically amnesty being one and then amnesty two, and then other changes that had taken place with respect to the receptiveness and continuing with civil assessments, those collections started to go down drastically like it had been for all of the courts. But when the agreement was reached for, I think it's $1 million-ish of the civil assessment monies that would be paid for the debt service, $1 million was very manageable. But what happened since then, since the project moved forward, was the civil assessment revenues continued to decline steadily downward. And moreover, what's happened with respect to the civil assessments and how it's viewed, and which is one of the items that's being considered today, in 2019, civil assessments then became part of your allocation formula. So if you were to say you get $100 million in your allocation and your workload formula says you need $105 million, the civil assessment goes towards the $105 million formula. But in this instance, the debt service, which is tied up for 30 to 50 years, depending on what debt service bond payment you have, that money will never be able to be touched by a local court for that purpose. In fact, that money is taken right off the top before the court gets its money as part of its allocation. So it never comes into play as part of your discretionary expenditure. Today, I would say that it would be problematic for civil assessments to be tied up in this lengthy of a debt service. But today, it's because the process was changed to consider local revenues, such as civil assessment, as part of your allocation formula, is where it has become a bit of a problem. And with them declining, even if civil assessments went down to zero, the court would be on the hook to pay for the debt service payment as part of the agreement, which had changed because of the way that civil assessment and local revenue is being booked as part of the funding allocation formula. So I guess that is the basis for committing the civil assessment money for the construction of the project, which was essentially cut before the recognition of civil assessment revenues was changed as part of your allocation formula, I would say. I hope that helps.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so that helps, but I guess I still get back to this question, and that maybe it's not even an important question. So if it's not really related, then I'm missing something here. But You know, all the other counties have gotten buildings built. We had one built recently, and we're in it now, that we didn't have any, obviously, the same kind of a debt service issue. I'm not sure why some courts end up having that versus other courts who don't have it. And is it because, absent those commitments to the debt service, they wouldn't have qualified or wouldn't have been authorized to have that new building? In other words, did they make a choice that, hey, you know, we know we're taking some bit of an assumed risk of being able to make these payments, but it's important for us to have this facility, and we'll take that risk because if we didn't take that risk, we wouldn't get the project. I don't know if it's that or if it's something else, and I think that is what I'm trying to drill down on.
Yeah, so where did the debt obligation come from?
Well, it was, so it's hard to say, because I'm not familiar with some of the other obligations that existed, and I'm sure the willingness of a court to make a contribution towards debt service was very appealing for those making decisions about whether a court should be constructed or not. But in this particular instance, I think that obligation / commitment that was entered into was helpful in getting the project constructed. Conversely, there are some courts, as you pointed out, Judge Siebert, that have zero local financial commitment towards a debt service as well. So what's the reason behind that? Maybe it's related to priorities, and maybe it was related to the fact that some projects were advanced. At the end of the day, you know, the circumstances have changed dramatically since they were first entered into, and civil assessments were not counted. There was no funding formula, Waltham to be specific, that was really in existence before those deals were entered into. So a lot has changed. I don't think that some of these things were being considered early on in the stage. Certainly the recognition that civil assessment revenue is now recognized as a part of your allowance for an allocation, if you will, based on your workload. So that changed in 2019, and some of these, and that's very significant. And some of these agreements were entered into in 2010. So certainly a change in circumstances did play into that, but it's where we are right now. And I think that's what is being presented for consideration. Not that I'm presenting it, I just am speaking to this, by the way.
Does that help you at all, Judge Siebert?
Yeah, that gives me some better understanding of what we're talking about. One last question, which is the request really being made that, hey, we were supposed to use X dollars of our civil assessment to pay the debt service. X is now Y, which is significantly less than X, and therefore, we want some allocation of money to help essentially compensate for that loss of revenue so that we can make our debt service. Is that the gist of what they're asking for here? Or is it just having something to do with the formula for the, what you guys call Waltham?
Not anymore.
Okay. Yeah, the judge, would it be helpful if I kind of
sure.
waited on?
Please.
As I understand it, Judge, I think the recognition is to not book, if you will, that amount of civil assessment that is being directed at the debt service as part of your allocation. So that comes off of whatever civil assessment monies that you collect, and then the amount over and above that debt service is booked towards your allocation formula. So it's just discounted from the calculation of what a court should get, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
If that's the way it is, I do understand it now. If that is the correct explanation, thank you.
Okay. Any other discussions or thoughts on this? Or
I had a question.
Go ahead, Judge Kelly.
Judge Kelly, are the other courts separate and apart from Santa Clara? Are the other courts that are listed on page 6 of the materials? Are those obligations tied to court construction projects, do we know? Or are those other issues that they have created that level of obligation?
So Judge Kelly, this is Chad Finke. I know Alameda's on the list. I can speak to us. Ours is, so it's tied to our Dublin courthouse. And I can't speak for any of the other courts on the list.
I believe Fresno's is as well.
Okay, thank you. I was just wanting the background.
So one last question for me. I'm sorry to hog the discussion here, but what is the financial impact, assuming that this proposal moves forward, how does this impact the rest of the courts besides the five in terms of, does it mean they have some additional contribution? They get less because we're giving more, or how does it, what is, how does it, what's the impact on the other people, the other courts? Sorry.
I'm sorry, I had to step away from that. I'm not sure if somebody's taking Judge Siebert's question. Is?
I can. So essentially, Judge Siebert, what it would do is the column in our workload formula that talks about your percentage of funding. We have courts funded at 7%, some might be at 90%. Let's say this court in particular is currently funded at 85%. And it's decided to discount them, to use David's word, to discount them a bit more for their debt obligation. That could bring them down to, say, 80% of funding. So when new funding comes into the branch and it's allocated out via our workload formula, this court could be eligible for more funding, which, yes, would mean some other courts would get less.
And not significantly so, but that's a very good explanation. So At the end of the day, what you look at is this court, where is it on its funding level? And the lower your percentage, and I'm overgeneralizing this, the more money you get. So if you're funded at 90%, you're waiting in line to get part of that new money for understandable reasons to courts that's funded at 70%. You're all going to get money, but the court that's funded at 70% is going to get more of that new money than the 90% court's going to get. With this proposal here, and the debt obligation to that court, it may move it from funded at 80% of what it needs down to 75% of what it needs. And if now you're at 75%, you're going to get more of that new money bucket than the court that's at 90%, as an overgeneralization.
All right, thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Any other, so we're still on this item, any other discussions or questions or motions for that matter?
Judge Conklin, I would be happy to move approval of the recommendations contained on page seven. That would be recommendations 1 and 2.
Okay, it's been moved that those two recommendations be approved. Is there a second?
This is Judge Kelly, I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded that the recommendations at page 7, numbered 1 and 2, be approved. Now it's open for discussion on the motion that is pending. Any further discussion, any other discussion on the pending motion? Hearing none, it's generally my practice to, recognizing we're on Zoom and having everybody say yay, and you can't really record that, to inquire as to whether or not there is an opposition to the motion that has been seconded, that to accept the recommendations of page 7. Any opposition or abstention to the recommendation? Okay, I hear no opposition or abstention. So I am deeming the recommendations at page 7 of the material unanimously approved. Okay.
So Judge Conklin, this is Brandy. So what that's going to look like, and I apologize if you hear the dogs in the background, I think there's a delivery. But what this will look like then is we do need to compile information for to come back to FMS to review, so that we are encompassing all courts in the review of these obligations. And then, so that would be part one. But part two and number two of the recommendation, as it currently stands, is that we could currently go to TICPAC as it relates to the workload formula, and that the adjustment would be to show the actual impact as opposed to a zero in the formula.
And is our ultimate plan to get this to the council for its July meeting?
For ARP submissions, it's kind of a bit too quick of a turnaround. So we're looking for implementation next fiscal year, budget year plus one. So 2023-24.
Okay, so we got plenty of time.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for that clarification, Oksana. Thank you very much. But you're still up, because I believe we have you on item two, which is allocation methodology of the trial court's funding for the 2022-2023, which is our fiscal year coming up, or the fiscal year, I always get it backwards too, that we're in, coming up. So Oksana is going to present the allocation methodology for the proposed augmentation for the 22-23 governor's budget that, remember, is still a proposed budget, hasn't been finalized yet. Concerning the consumer price or the inflationary adjustment funding to promote greater fiscal equality and for 23 additional trial court judgeships. Oksana?
Thank you, Judge Conklin. This report is to assist the subcommittee in developing recommendations for consideration by the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee on the allocation methodologies for the proposed funding for the trial court operations included in 2022-23 governor's budget. The proposed governor's budget reflects critical investments to advance equal access for all Californians and is the largest budget ever for the judicial branch. New funding for the trial courts included three distinct purposes, and we will look at them in the proposed order of allocation. The proposed budget includes $84.2 million ongoing general fund in recognition of trial court operational cost pressure due to the inflation, which represents an overall increase of 3.8% of the workload formula allocation from 2021-22. Last year's ongoing inflationary increase was allocated as a 3.7% increase over each court's 2020-21 workload formula allocation, including the two base funding for courts and a non-sheriff security reduction, excluding. The new $94.2 million funding could be allocated in the same manner and applied first in order to calculation steps of the proposed new funding. Next, the proposed budget includes $100 million ongoing general fund to be allocated by the Judicial Council to expand equal access, promote greater fiscal equity, and materially reduce the funding gap between trial courts. In 2018-19, trial courts receive ongoing funding intended to equalize funding among courts. By bringing courts that were below the statewide average funding level closer to the average and did not include a non-sheriff security reduction, the new equity funding of $100 million can be allocated in the same manner by bringing courts below the statewide average up to or as close to the statewide average funding level as calculated for the 2022-23 and applied second in order of the proposed new funding. Lastly, to further expand access to justice by addressing judicial workload needs, the proposed budget includes $39.9 million general fund in 2022-23, of which $31.2 million is for the expenses related to the support for the 23 additional Superior Court judgeships that are currently unfunded. In 2019-20, the trial courts received funding for support related to the funding of the 25 judgeships. This funding was allocated via workload formula and did include a non-sheriff security reduction. The new $31.2 million funding could be allocated in the same manner and processed last in the order of proposed new funding. The recommendations presented to the FMS for consideration are listed on page 183 of the materials and are contingent on the proposed funding being included in the enacted 2022 budget. That concludes our presentation, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Oksana, thank you so much. So it's open for discussion, the three recommendations set forth at page 183. So I just want to make sure I understand it, and a very good job presenting it, and I'm always the last one to understand it, so which is why I asked the question. So the 84.2 will go out 3.8% in to all the courts. All the courts, it's a 3.8% increase. That's the way it's distributed. The 100 million goes out pursuant to the formula that we've previously approved. Do we have an idea as to whether or not that 100 million will bring all the underfunded courts up to the average funding level?
Not yet, Judge. We are currently working on obtaining the new need numbers for the next fiscal year. By the time we get to tick back, we should have a good idea.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
So I was going to ask a follow-up because I was on the same wavelength as Judge Conklin on this. The 100 million is supposed to hopefully get people closer to, if not everyone, at the average statewide average percentage funding. I get that. What we don't know is whether that 100 million will do that or not. Assuming it doesn't do that, is it up for discussion or a consideration that in any way that the other 84.2 million, which is the CPI funding, could be used that way, or is that off the table altogether?
I'll have Randy confirm, but I think it's off the table altogether. I don't think the 84.2 can be used for any other purpose than to go to the 3.8. Brandy, is that correct?
I would say that is in line with legislative intent.
Okay. And then the 39 million obviously is for judgeship funding, so none of that would be used to true up, if you will, to get to the average. In other words, it is what it is. The 100 million is going to get everybody there, or it's not. If it doesn't, then oh well. I guess there's another possibility, probably unlikely, but that it gets everybody there and then there's some extra. I guess that, at least in theory, is a possibility, right?
Yes.
And if that happened, the unlikely thing, I suppose, then would some decision have to be made about how that other amount, the excess, gets distributed, or would that simply just go the same way the 84 million went, based on everybody gets what they get?
All the Brandy or Fran weigh in, but it's, and I don't want to step out. It's my understanding is the same thing. It's intended to bring up the underfunded courts, and that's its purpose. And if it's enough to do that, then it won't be used for another purpose. Or am I overstating it, Brandy or Fran?
No. Oh, go ahead, Fran.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Yes, I mean, the way the money was proposed in the governor's budget is this is intended for equity funding. So equity funding would first have the goal of adjusting those underfunded courts.
So it's really a win-win from my perspective for the courts, because everybody gets the 3.8 regardless of where they are on their funding level. So that's the first, and there is another step here. And again, the question, and I see Rebecca has her hand and then David and then Chad, you get your 3.8, then we adjust where you are on the funding level to determine whether you get any of the 100 million. And then if you're underfunded, you get that portion of the 100 million to bring you up. So now turning to Rebecca and then David and then Chad.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. My question is for Oksana or for Brandy. I see the reference to CPI being done second, one of them being done second. I'm sorry, I lost it on my page. I can't remember if that was something we did in the past. I'm sorry for my lack of memory, but is there a reason we did that in the past and that we're pointing that out at this point?
I can say for the current year, we received equity funding. Yes, we did apply it first. Fran or Zlatko, I'm not sure if you want to add anything more on the order of the CPI.
different.
That's Vodka.
Yeah, I mean, there are different ways to stack it, definitely. But in terms of sort of the way in which you could move through this, we just laid it out as CPI goes to all courts, equity funding goes to those courts that are on the bottom portion of the funding spectrum, and then the judgeship money, Judge Siebert, it is historically been gone through the workload formula, so we'd also have that added benefit of helping equity, because we would do the, and I believe your materials speak to that, where 50% of that funding would go to the underfunded courts and then the remaining funding distributed. So I think it gets us on a good path that you sort of represented as all courts get some funding from the CPI, and then you have the underfunded courts getting equity, and then our last effort on the funding from the judgeships goes to the workload formula, which has the benefit of helping the lower funded courts, like the second step, and there's also a portion that goes to all courts within the parameters of the formula, like the CPI does. So I think there's multiple compounding efforts here that really help all courts in this historic budget really move to a really great funding level. And it really shrinks the disparity between the lowest courts and the upper funded courts.
Ms. Lotko, I think I found the item I was looking for, and I think, so in the 100 million equity funding description, the last sentence says this funding could be completed second in order of application. Is that because of the shrinking? I mean, is there a benefit to doing that versus some other order?
Well, in contemplating how it could be presented, we just looked at everybody moves and improves from the funding level if you do CPI first. So everybody gets something there, and even the lower funded courts will move towards that. And then you can see where they sit in terms of their funding levels then, and then see what is needed and how far the equity funding can go. And then you add on, then the final part was the judgeship funding that would help with the workload throughout the trial courts.
Thank you. That answers my question.
David?
Yeah, thanks, Judge. And the Zlatko did answer part of the question, so that shortens my remarks. But I wanted to briefly speak to something that Judge Siebert mentioned, and that is whether the judgeship positions could be apportioned a little bit differently rather than going into the TCTF. I think it was a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, it's all kind of melding together. What we tried to do in the Budget Advisory Committee's work is to try to, I guess, begin simplifying the way money is received and how it's distributed. And while I would love to think that the equity funding is going to continue going forward until we receive 100% equity, we'll have to wait and see if that particular approach happens. And I'm really happy that the governor included the $100 million in there for the equity adjustment. But the thing about the judgeship formula in terms of what it is that we are receiving, putting it into the trial court trust fund ensures that the funding of the judicial branch continues to move in a stability plane, because everybody's going to be receiving monies going forward. And there's going to be an important time where I think that the inequity that we have is going to start to flatten out. We're going to be more aligned, and I think this is a good approach with the $39 million that we're getting for the branch for this particular purpose. What I like to do is whenever the legislature / the decision makers in Sacramento identify a specific desire in terms of how do the monies should be distributed, I think sticking to the script is extremely important. I think I've heard this on many occasions from presentations from Martin and others, that it's important for us to be aligned with the approach and the language that's been presented. And for that reason, I think it probably would be to our benefit to, align our decisions similar to what was intended by the people that have made the money available to us. So that's just my commentary on that.
David, thank you. Chad?
Thanks, Judge. You know, excuse me, like David, Zlatko pretty much answered my question, which was I just wanted to confirm that, sort of going to Judge Siebert's point, that the new judgeship money, that at least a portion of that would go through the workload formula. And so that would be another opportunity then for the courts under the line to be brought closer up. And Zlatko did address that. So thank you.
You bet. Any other questions, discussion on the three pending recommendations of page 183 of the material?
Judge Conklin, this is Kevin Harrigan. I have my hand up. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see it. Kevin, go ahead.
Okay, no, thank you for that. And I think it's partially been answered, or maybe all the way answered, and so hopefully this isn't too repetitive for the group. But on the order of events on the CPI and then the equity funding, is there a negligible difference in the order as far as the ending influx of this great budget? I mean, I don't want to pull too much at this thread because I think it's overall a great budget, but I'm wondering if the order of events is up to us. Is it, I guess, prescriptive from the legislature? I just wonder if there's a thought given to that. I mean, the recommendation is one before the other, and so I didn't know if it was within our purview to discuss that and change it, or if it's just written as is.
Thank you. I'll take that. Thank you for the question. There's nothing in terms of the proposal in the governor's budget that is specific to sort of the order of application that is within the discretion of the Judicial Council. So that would be a recommendation that would sort of advance through the committee process. The budget just really speaks to kind of the intended purpose for each of those buckets of money, but not the sequence in which they would be applied to our own internal formula.
So Kevin's perspective, and I appreciate the way he stated with, is there a negligible difference? One thing that, at least from my perspective that I've seen, is we've moved through the challenges of equity funding as compared to also making sure that all courts get money that they desperately need, is the 3.8 is intended to address, especially that becomes, if you look at the news almost every day, given inflation, more real for all the courts. So by giving them the inflationary funding first, everybody gets that addressed. Whereas if you flipped it and the first thing you did is give the courts that are under the line, the 100 million, then the equity funding comes out and they're now, and I want to be careful the way I state this, they now have changed. If you give it to them first, they almost, and this will sound critical, but it's almost a double dipping, because the first thing that happens is they're below the line, they get the $100 million, and then the 3.8 comes out and they're closer to the line and they still are entitled to the same amount. Whereas if you give them the 3.8 first, everybody moves pursuant to inflation and gets protected before the 100 million. But Kevin's question is a good one. I don't know if it's really a form over substance as far as the allocation difference, or if we even know that. Any speculation? Doesn't appear to be.
Well, part of my thinking behind that, I guess, is if the CPI funding was, or excuse me, if the order was reversed and there was a court below the line, then that might leave a court that's already behind a little bit further behind, if that makes sense. So I'm sure mathematically there is a difference. I just don't know how great it is and if it's worth discussing or not, but I can absolutely understand the order that's put in front of us. I just didn't want to leave those courts that are behind even further behind. It doesn't sound like that's been contemplated or specifically mentioned, but Just wanted to float that to the group to see if we had any thoughts about that.
That's a good concern. So I see that Neil has his hand up and then Chad. Neil?
Here's how I look at it. So you have your cost increase money, that's the 3.8%. That's supposed to be calculated on the expenses that are already in your budget, so you keep abreast of the increase in costs. So that's why you would do that first, because it's based upon what you already have in your budget, even if you're underfunded. The second one is to just bring those underfunded up to as close to or at least to the statewide average. And then the third one is related to the judgeships, but you do that strictly by workload. And as on page 183, you know, we had this previous policy that if you're still under that average, we want to devote more of any new money, bring you up as close to that average, and then the remaining amount would go to all the courts.
And I apologize, who had that? Was it somebody else had a hand up? Was it Chad? Chad, go ahead. Thanks for that comment.
Thanks, Judge. I guess I'm just trying to figure out, you know, mathematically, right? If the amount that has been allocated is 84.2 million, and that's meant to represent a 3.8% increase for all courts. If we did the 100 million first, would the 84, it seems like the 84.2 then wouldn't be enough to give everybody 3.8, right? Or would it? I mean, I don't know what I'm not sure what that 3.8 was calculated on to get to the 84.2 number, but that seems like that answers the question, doesn't it? Or maybe I'm missing something.
No, Chad, I would agree with that assessment, that you wouldn't have enough to get there if you did the equity before the CPI. I don't think
you. But I guess what I don't know is, you know, does that leave us at 3.7, or you know, how far off of the 3.8 intent does it leave? And I am certainly not the guy who can do that math, but somebody can, I'm sure.
And believe me, my question isn't intended to overcomplicate this. I think it will be probably a negligible difference, but I think it's worth, you know, it was at least worth discussing. But I'm willing to go along with the recommendation as it's stated. I'm not looking to put the brakes on or switch the order. I want to make sure it was thought through. That's all.
And just David, for clarification, oh, sorry. Go ahead, David.
No, go ahead, Brandy, and then we'll go to David. Brandy, okay. Go ahead.
So the 84.2 million, it's 3.8% of the current year's workload formula allocation. So the amount of money you received, add 3.8% to get us to that total.
David?
That's exactly what I was just going to say. And if you add 100 million to it, then that notion that it's an increase over this year's budget is going to be inflated, let's say, by $100 million. So I think the reason to do it based on a 3.8% increase over this budget is aligned with, I think, what was intended by looking at the 3.8. So thank you, Brandy.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
Sorry, that's my clock. I like the order in which this is laid out. The 84.2%. If somebody is, Chad was describing his math skills as simple minor in kindergarten. So I just look at the 3.8 as it just moves everybody uniformly the same amount. So theoretically, we'd keep them within a minuscule difference in the same funding level. I mean, everybody's moving the same level. And then once everybody moves up the 3.8, then you figure out, okay, where are you now? That you've all been adjusted for inflation. Now, where are you as far as below the level, which just strikes me as a following the intent of the money. But I'm just one person on it.
I appreciate you indulging that question, and I would appreciate all the thought and explanation. I'm ready to go forward and would make a motion, recommendation, if you would accept it.
I will. So you're making, I want to make sure I understand, you're making the motion that the recommendation page 183 of the materials be approved as stated?
Yes, I am, Judge.
Is there a second?
Rebecca Fleming will second that.
Moved and seconded that recommendations A, B, and C at page 183 be approved. Now it's open for further discussion. And hearing no further discussion, is there any opposition to the motion the seconded motion that A, B, and C be approved. Hearing none, I'm deeming that A, B, and C at page 183 are approved unanimously by the committee. Thank you, folks. And moving now to item three, hold on. Yeah, item three, the base funding floor review. Oksana, you're still on the spotlight. This is set forth at page, I want to make sure I've got the right page. Is it 183, 186? No, I'm sorry, turn the page.
184, Jed?
184, thank you. 184, the materials. So this here, this is addressed as the two smallest counties, Alpine and Sierra, requesting their base funding floor increases through the current request process, and the council approved a $150,000 increase beginning fiscal year 22-23. As the issue was deliberated within FMS, as I understand it, the trial court budget advisory committee questions arose if the current process is prudent and effective for the two base funding floor courts in obtaining additional funding. Oksana?
Thank you, Judge Conklin. So this report is to assist the subcommittee in discussion and development of recommendation regarding adjustment requests to the base funding floor for the two smallest trial courts, Alpine and Sierra. When the workload formula was first approved, a funding floor was established to reflect the costs of the minimal level of court operations, as there were operational funding needs above of what the workload formula provided. Based on staffing needs and operational costs at the time, a base funding floor amount of $750,000 was approved by Judicial Council effective 2014-15. There have been two subsequent council approved increases to the funding floor. A $50,000 inflationary adjustment effective in 2019-20, and mostly recently, a $150,000 inflationary adjustment approved by the council in past May, increasing the base funding floor to $950,000 effective in 2022-23. The base funding floor is ongoing set funding amount as approved by the council, and is currently allocated outside the workload formula. As a result, it does not recognize cost changes that courts within the workload formula are eligible to receive, such as new benefits funding, inflationary cost increase funding, and other discretionary funding. During the November 2021 FMS and TIGBAC meetings, when the court's request to increase the base funding floor amount was under consideration, members recognized that the current process for these two courts to request a funding floor augmentation is onerous and time-consuming, especially when considering there are automatic funding adjustments included in the workload formula for the other 56 trial courts. The recommendation found on page 185 of the materials requests that the subcommittee consider the current process in place for the two affected courts to request an increase for their base funding floor allocation. That concludes our presentation.
Oksana, thank you very much. All right, discussion, folks. And there's no way this can work to the detriment, Rebecca has her hand up. There's no way this can work to the detriment of those two courts, correct?
That's correct.
I mean, okay, Rebecca?
Yeah, I would just like to say that I am in support of establishing a process by which these courts can be adjusted automatically. I think that this most recent adjustment took a tremendous amount of work by these two courts, and frankly, a level of scrutiny that we do not apply towards all the other courts. And I think that when we're talking about things like CPI and adjustments for existing expenditures, certainly those courts have those as well. And it would seem to me that, you know, going forward, having a process that is somehow prescriptive is not only beneficial to them by being able to plan and to move forward, but also keeps them on a level playing field with the rest of us as far as you know, the level of reporting and accountability back to our own group. And so I would support some kind of a inflationary process being established for these base level courts.
Any other discussion concerning the recommendation set forth at page 185?
I'm sorry, I don't know how to do that automatically.
Oh, I'm sorry, Judge Kelly. I should have looked in the corner. Go ahead.
I agree 100% with what Rebecca just said. I am assigned to these two particular courts every year for their budget change proposal updates, and I have heard quite a lot about how onerous this process has been. And when you break down the numbers from the time that they had their first floor funding in 14-15 to what they're at now, I think that it makes sense to start to automate their increase along the lines as the other trial courts. So I agree 100% with what Rebecca said.
Great. Can I interpret that as a motion?
Yes, I would move to adopt the recommendation on page 185.
Is there a second?
Yamasaki seconds.
All right, moved and seconded. The recommendation of page 185 be approved. Any further discussion on the recommendation? Hearing none, is there any opposition to the recommendation set forth at page 185 of the materials? Hearing none, I'll deem the recommendation of page 185 unanimously approved. Thank you. And Oksana, you're off the hook. Thanks very much. We really appreciate all your help today. And Brandy, the focus now comes to you for item 4 on our agenda. This is the Judicial Council Provided Services update. This discusses the updates regarding Judicial Council Provided Services versus those that are funded by local trial court operations.
Happy to, Judge. Before we jump on to item 4, can we just circle back on item 3 for a moment? I'm so sorry, I'm having computer issues. I had to switch to my phone, but as the recommendation reads for item 3, I guess, does the subcommittee have any recommendations or suggestions as to how some kind of inflationary increases should be provided? Or would you like Budget Services to come back to the group with some recommendations?
Any thoughts, folks? Neil?
One simple thing would be, you tie it to whatever the cost increase appropriation is that comes to all the trial courts, that their base level funding goes up just the way that everybody else does.
So if we all went up by 3.8, so would they?
Correct.
Sorry.
Judge Kelly?
I don't know how to do the automatic hand raise. I apologize. I would agree. And in fact, when looking at the recommendation from the prior topic, it particularly excluded the two base floor funded courts. Okay. And if you incorporate them into that plan, I think that that would be a good way forward to make sure that they are recognized for the cost of living increases that they do have to deal with throughout their fiscal year.
So I don't know how to raise my hand either, but what everybody is saying sounds logical to me, but my preference would be to hear from the budget people to say, hey, we've looked at it and here are some options. This be our recommendation, and maybe that recommendation is exactly what everybody's already said, but rather than just winging it, for me, I'd prefer to have somebody, something that's been thought through. So that's my two cents.
Thank you. David, you had your hand up?
Judge Siewert expressed exactly what I was thinking. And part of the reason is there's already been a mechanism voted upon to move forward for the next budget year. So before moving forward, I would, with an alternate approach, I would like to have some additional information first as well.
All right. So I guess the recommendation has been moved and approved. Brandy's asked for clarification. That is input from staff as to what that inflationary factor would be. But would it be fair to state that it would be no less in any case than the inflationary factor applied to all the other courts? So they would never be to their detriment.
Yes.
So at least that inflationary factor applied to all the other trial courts, but more if appropriate. Does that give you what you need, Randy?
Yes. To confirm, we would put together options to bring back, but at minimum, including the inflationary increase.
I think that's what I interpret the group to be saying.
Okay.
Any more clarification? David, I see you looking off to the corner of your eye like you're not so sure, or did I just...
No. I think I froze, but I'm in agreement. Thank you.
Okay. You never freeze. Okay. All right.
I don't have Jed, on who made the original motion, but do we need to ask for an amendment to the original motion for item 3, that we come back with options?
I guess
Judge Kelly made the motion.
Thank you.
Motion, I'm happy to adopt that into the motion made.
Perfect. And I would second that amended motion.
And any opposition to this second amended motion as being modified? Unanimously approved. Thanks.
And by the way, if I can just, since we've already voted on that item, if you were to calculate 3.8% on 950, which is the current base, doesn't that calculate to something less than 150, which was... whatever that, I don't know if 950 is the new or the old.
950 is the new.
Right, which is why I ask, I don't ever want it to be to their detriment. So that's
right.
That's the only concern I have, is they got more than 3.8% this time.
Yeah. So more to I guess, look into, just to make sure that we're aligned with what I guess what we're intending to do is maintain that everybody gets a very... modest but necessary increase.
Okay, I think we can circle back to item 4, Brandy.
All right, thank you for that, Judge. I apologize. So item 4 is to initiate a discussion regarding a current FMS work plan item to evaluate the impact of judicial counsel provided services compared to those that are funded by local court operations funds. And this item has been carried on the work plan since 2014. So this was when the workload adjustment-based formula methodology, or WAFM, was first established. The Council Provided Services Review was included as a placeholder to research and determine any impacts of these services to the workload formula, now the workload formula model. So considering the amount of time that has passed, we're asking for current input on the basis of this item and direction on any associated evaluation to what is now our workload formula model. And that's it, Judge. I'll pass it back to you for discussion.
Great. So open for discussion. Judge, go ahead.
Sorry. I was trying to find my unmute button. I think if the question is whether this is an item that should continue to be examined, I think that it should. There are expenses that courts incur, and I don't want to limit it to just large courts, because medium, large, and small, medium courts obviously are in that situation as well. And those expenses can be pretty significant. And I do think that if there are services that courts are relying upon some of the opportunities that are available through the Judicial Council, that they should be, the responsibility of a court to be responsible for, just as it is for all of the other courts. And so I understand that there are situations where there may not be capacity to take on something locally, but on the other hand, we have benefited immensely by some of the services that have been provided by the Judicial Council. SAP used to be one that each court paid for, and I think it's changed a little bit there, but we also have things like labor negotiations. Some courts rely on the Judicial Council's great representation along that line, and others have to spend quite a bit of money in that area. So I do think that this is something that should continue to be part of the review of this subcommittee.
All right, Rebecca, I saw your hand up. Thanks, David.
I have a question for Brandy, and that is, do we have information on what services are provided to the courts by court?
No, not at this time. So part of that research, Rebecca, could include identifying those services first and bringing it back to the subcommittee.
Thank you.
Sure.
Kevin?
I don't have any objection to looking into the item, and I don't disagree with anything that's been said as far as it might be worthwhile to look into it. And I do think it's going to be depending on court size and particular need. I mean, we might have some courts of same size who use services totally differently in frequency and breadth, and it might change from year to year, quite honestly, depending on need. So I think this might be difficult to fully analyze to get a grasp on, but I'm not opposed to looking into it. I just don't know what it will yield and how that might change service delivery to those courts who really rely on those services. So I'll leave it at that.
So the recommendation is to determine if it remains a valid action item for use towards a workload formula. So as I hear the discussion, the answer would be yes. In other words, we keep this on our work plan to address the services that courts obtain and as compared to the services that courts themselves provide absent judicial branch assistance. And I think maybe a good starting point would just be, I think Rebecca asked it. I hate to bring up the infamous S word, which is survey, but maybe survey the courts to see what services I think we have in the past they utilize from the branch.
Wouldn't the branch know more than, I mean, it seems like rather than asking all the courts what they do, for example, our court uses HR all the time. Our chief executive officer calls HR all the time, even though we have our own in-house HR person, which is a whole different issue. But wouldn't the branch know what courts use what? And, I mean, I assume they keep some kind of record of how they allocate their time, but maybe I'm wrong.
Good question. Brandy, do we know?
We would be surveying our own folks, but it's definitely a place we could start for sure.
All right. Good point, Judge Siebert.
Judge, this is David.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we are already including in the, I think, the R&E work, some of the expenses that are covered by the trial courts. Are you thinking about expenses that are not already being charged or expenses that could be identified as a chargeable expense for reimbursement?
I guess more the latter, but as I suggested, I think Judge Siebert's approach makes more sense, and that is just to turn internally to say, here's the services that are currently provided to the courts.
Thank you.
So, And I apologize for being a little thick-headed on this, but is the recommendation stated on page 186, does that change anything?
No, we would keep on the work plan. When we get to that item next, Judge, we can determine a timeline for that. But it would be budget services coming back with information identifying those services for further discussion.
Great, thanks for clarifying that. Okay.
Sure.
Any further discussion on the recommendation of page 186 for item 4? This is an action item. Is there a motion?
Judge Conklin, Judge Kelly has her hand up.
I'm sorry, Judge Kelly. You raised your hand. Oh, sorry.
That out. So thank you. I would move to adopt the recommendation on page 186.
Is there a second?
I would be happy to second David Yamasaki.
Very good. Thank you. Moved and seconded that the recommendation of page 186 be approved. Any further discussion? Any opposition to the recommendation is moved. Hearing none, the recommendation of page 186 is unanimously approved. which gets us to our last item, which is just a general discussion of our FMS work plan. This is an action item, and Cottrell is with us to discuss the current FMS work plan and review and updating of that work plan. Cottrell?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So item five, this can be found on pages 187 through 204 of your materials, is the recommendation to review each of the items for the current FMS work plan for consideration by the TIGBAC at its July meeting. Now, on an annual basis, FMS develops a work plan to direct its efforts in developing and refining workload formula, as well as other methodologies, including self-help, court-appointed dependency counsel, and interpreter funding. The current work plan, as approved by TIGBAC last year, is provided as attachment 5A on page 190 of the materials. So ultimately, it is recommended that FMS review each of the items for the current work plan for updating. We'll go through each of them one by one and individually for discussion and recommendations. The first item, or item one, is the impact of judicial counsel provided services versus those funded by local trial court funds. Brandy just provided a highlight of this one, and I guess the ultimate question is, should this item be moved or removed from the work plan? If my notes are correct, we would like to retain it in the current work plan.
That's what I understood the previous motion to approve, yes.
Okay, I'll go ahead. Unless there are other questions or comments, can I go ahead and move to item two?
You may.
Okay. Item two is the development of an allocation methodology for the court interpreters program. This is still in progress, and the subcommittee may want to consider moving this item to 2223.
There's no hope we can get it done in 21-22, so.
Any objection to moving to 2223?
No. Doesn't appear to be. Appears to be a lot of positive. Yep, great.
Okay. For item three, this is a review of the cluster system and base funding floor. The subcommittee may want to consider separating these two items into two separate items.
And you say two separate items.
Correct. One for the cluster system and a second item for the base funding floor, or excuse me, base floor funding.
And Judge, this is Brandy. So the base funding item is something we discussed already as item three. But with the cluster review, we think it would be good to separate the cluster review system. Part of that review could be impacted by the new funding we could receive for the new judgeships next fiscal year. And so we'd just like to give this a bit more time, but also we think we could address them separately.
Any objection to that? Okay, so the thought would be to, the item three would be approved essentially to break them out.
Correct.
And this is initiate an ad hoc subcommittee. Is that a fancy way of saying we need to appoint people to that, or do we already, I've just been away for a while. Do we already have that in place?
We do not yet. Judge, when that item is ready, we would be incorporating Leah Rose Goodwin and her team. So if we can circle back and maybe appoint at a later time, that would be great.
So Rebecca doesn't have to appoint David to that today?
I actually move on that right away. Can we get a second?
David, you so just went blank.
Yeah. So we'll know he will lead the subcommittee. Thank you.
When it comes around. All right, Cottrell, next.
Okay, this is item four. The subcommittee may want to consider marking this item as complete because the work for the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee has been completed. I take it as a yes for item four.
Yes, which I take no credit for having been away from the committee, but thanks to everybody else for completing that.
The final item is item five. This is the annual review of the base funding floor amounts. I guess ultimately the question here is, should any changes be made?
So as we review the base funding floor and when budget services comes back with some inflationary options, should we leave the current process in place where the courts would approach us in the event they'd like to request an increase for next year.
So, in other words, keep it as it is right now for next year, pending any changes that we'll implement based upon our previous discussions?
I'm seeing nods, but I think until something else is in place.
Well, and
can I... Counting us on your hand?
Sorry. This 22-23 is when their newest increase is taking effect, the $950,000 for their base floor funding. So this would make sense to me to keep it the same, and then we can review the other work that we've talked about on the other action items.
Good point. Okay, so the thought from the committee is just to keep that as stated. Okay.
Okay.
Control, does that give you everything you need?
It does there, but there
are Brandy, I'm sorry, more... Brandy and Control.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm not sure who I was referring to. Okay.
Next, we'd like to ask the subcommittee to consider adding an item for 22-23, ultimately to evaluate the workload formula adjustment request process. This is ARP, submitted in January 22. This was discussion item one of today's agenda, and it is included in the ARP policy to be included in the FMS work plan.
So we just left it out?
Inadvertently, yeah.
Okay, then I think we need to get, again, coming from the outside, any thoughts that we, any opposition to the request that we just close the inadvertent error and put it back in? I think that's affirmed.
Thank you. And then lastly, are there any new items the FMS would like to add to the work plan?
Did I see a hand up? Maybe not.
I have my hand up, Judge Conklin.
Great, thanks.
So I would like to propose that we either discuss putting it on the work plan or put it on the work plan, but we have had a number of discussions at FMS and at TICBAC around the maintenance of effort and related connection to civil assessments. And I recognize that there are many variables in play right now, but pending no change to the reliance on the civil assessments by the MOE courts and frankly their obligations, I would suggest that we put this on our work plan to come up with a solution. Many of you may remember our conversations with Mr. Wardlaw, where he has suggested that it really does need to be a self-driven solution. And I think that solution probably needs to start with us and be proposed to TICBAC. And so, you know, I guess what I would suggest is put something on the work plan that says pending, no adjustments with this next budget or even, I guess, the subsequent budget. I would propose that we put together a group that comes up with a suggestion or proposal to TICBAC.
So would this be the development of another ad hoc, just to make sure I capture my notes properly?
This would be the proposal that Mr. Yamasaki chair an ad hoc group on the MOE and related obligations to civil assessments.
David, what say you? He just turned off his camera.
Well, thank you for the tremendous confidence that you have, Rebecca, but I object to that level of confidence. That said, I do agree that this is an item that should be included in the work plan. I think being a little bit ahead of the process is better than playing catch up, because some of these things need to be acted upon very quickly. So I would agree to include that, notwithstanding a silly motion that she may have made.
So we're all deemed part of the ad hoc subcommittee, which means this will be just considered by this subcommittee itself. How's that for now? Great. I like that suggestion, Rebecca. So we add that to our work plan. Any other new items people would like to suggest? Okay. Does that get us to the end of this item?
It does, yes.
Great. So I think we're about to conclude the meeting. I feel a little awkward the way this meeting was run, because I've come in now after being away from FMS for all this time and it sort of took over, and I don't mean to do that. I acknowledge Judge Buckley's excellent leadership, and I neglected to acknowledge Rebecca's, because the two of them were co-chairs of this. And Rebecca was probably glad that she got a chance to take a breath for this meeting, but all I would try to do was administer it, not to step into her shoes or Judge Buckley's shoes. So I'm pleased to come back to this committee, at least in the short term, pleased to see that it's just effective as it was when I stepped away. And hopefully by the time we have a next meeting, a new co-chair will be appointed, but we'll see. Our next meeting, I think, is October 13th.
Oh, Judge, it's Brandy again. If I can just stop you, I'll be a stickler again. If we can please have a motion and second an approval for the work plan updates.
Of course, I invite a motion.
I so move.
Judge Kelly, second.
Second, Yamasaki.
Moved and seconded that the work plan as modified be approved. Any objections? I'll deem it unanimously approved. And Brandy, you weren't a stickler. I shouldn't have stepped away from that. So thanks very much for pointing that out. And my equal thanks to Brandy and to Zlatko and to Fran and others for getting us through and keeping us on track. So one more item that I'll just do to for the good of the order, a hand-raising lesson, because I just figured it out. So what you do is you click on the icon at the top that says people, and then to the bottom, there's a little thing that says raise your hand.
I found that towards the end of the meeting.
I did too, Judge Kelly. I didn't know it either. And I thought, how do we do this? So I'm trying to at least give you guys some useful information. So that's how you raise your hand. Or just wave it. Just wave at Rebecca and she'll put you on an ad hoc subcommittee.
Thank you.
We're done an hour and a half early scheduled, which is not a problem. But I don't want to adjourn the meeting unless there's anything else of general concern. Rebecca, what do you think?
I think that we have covered everything. I really do want to thank staff. There was a tremendous amount of information that went through here today. And as always, they guided us seamlessly through it. So thank you very much.
I agree completely. Okay, folks.
Thank you, everybody.
I'll leave a closing comment of as I always do, of go Dodgers. Thanks, folks. have a great afternoon.
You as well. See ya.
Be healthy. Bye-bye.